لله الحمد لله وكفى وسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى أما بعد اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم. So it's been a very busy weekend, running on fumes. I got maybe 3 hours of sleep last night, and then mostly today was unexpectedly working on construction plans for a masjid project in Chicago. So the project was, the architectural plans have been in the works for probably over a year. And it's a wild ride, you know, going to the county and sitting in front of the, you know, the ordinances and meeting all the requirements and applying for variances, and then some of them are granted and then reappealing, so on and so forth. So a long drawn out process. That's what it is. And so we actually came towards the final phases, and I was I'm on the board for, you know, the particular project. So they sent the final architectural rendition of what the facade was going to look like. And so this was going in tomorrow. I mean, this is a multi-million-dollar project, so the, you know, the stakes are high. So, and I was thinking, okay, I'm just going to, you know, look it over, and I thought it was done this morning. So I was looking at different type of architectures from masjid all over the world, because the, you know, the way the masjid looks from the outside is actually very important. It's the first impression a person gets when they see the masjid. And what we're really aiming for was sort of a very sleek and modern look, but something that was yet traditional, and sort of jiving something which was old world and yet was very new age at the same time. So I looked at the, you know, the plans, and then I completely revamped it. I mean, when I first actually got the renditions, I said, "What is this?" Right? And it was like pushing the stop button on the assembly line. I was like, "This is not going to be the masjid." So particularly because as soon as I saw it, it was not aesthetically pleasing. And I know how, I mean, the CEO of the project, you know, Sheikh Hussein, he is so OCD about everything. I mean, his fellow sent him a PowerPoint presentation, and now he have different columns. If you're going to try to create a poster for like a scientific presentation, he'll put on the grids, and yes, there is a grid function on PowerPoints, and he would measure how wide each column is to make sure everything's exactly the same, you know, the same type of distance from each other. I mean, everything has to be perfect. So, and that's why he was extremely frustrated throughout this project, because he said, I mean, you had architect after architect, and people say that, oh, you know, this is going to cost so much ahead of time. But when you actually do it, it comes out, you know, a $1 million project turns out to be $2 million. And people say, oh, you should always budget in for costs that are unexpected. It's not that are unexpected, it's that people are incompetent up front. They don't do due diligence, they don't have foresight, they don't do the research that they're supposed to do, they don't really delve as deep as they should. And then, lo and behold, oh, we never thought about this, or we never knew about this, and there's no way to foresee this. So he would really nail them on this. It's a limited space, and so we squeeze every inch out of this thing. And I cannot tell you how many times, I mean, we looked at the blueprints for the interior ad nauseum, trying to foresee what could possibly happen, because that's a part of good planning, and that makes the difference between a good product and an amazing product. I mean, it's pretty amazing that when you talk to Siri, it knows all the questions that you're going to sort of ask. Right? It knows that you're going to ask Siri, what religion are you? It knows that you're going to ask Siri, you know, are you married? He knows that, he's gonna, I mean, all these things that people would, how are you doing? So, and it, they pre-program all these type of things because they know how people think. And so there's so many things when you're building just a masjid that you're forcing that, could there be any possibility that later on we should not have regret? So for example, things that people don't think about. We had one whole plan, the bathrooms were all made, but it so happened that the doors opened up somewhere close to the masjid. So, you know, foresight is that, so, but everything looked perfect, everything fit well, so what's wrong with that? But the idea is that, you know, sometimes, and you find it in the thing is that when people make a lot of wudu, there's a stench. And that stench can actually permeate into the masjid. So they said, no, we can't have this, we need to create a circumstance where the airflow cannot go into the masjid, and so they redesigned it, you know. For example, when people are going to use the bathroom. I mean, there was literally meetings on how to create a circumstance where it becomes foolproof so najasa can't come into the masjid. Because you see this all the time, that people, you know, just walk into the bathroom, then they walk into with the same slippers onto the wudu section, and then another person walks in with wet foot, and then he just comes onto the, you know, the musalla, and everything's gone. You know, everything's all messed up. So, how do you create a circumstance where that can't happen? You have to make it dummy proof, you know. What happens when you're in Chicago weather and people are going to drag in their sludgy shoes? How many steps is going to take to make sure that the sludge is gone before you introduce maybe a different material? I mean, really trying to brainstorm what could potentially happen. What are all our potential use cases? And does this accommodate any potential use that we could foresee in the future? And if it's not, then how do we, you know, address that issue? And so they went over that plan. You know, how many angles is it towards the when you enter the Qibla is in a certain direction? So what if we change the entire masjid and put it in an angle so that people are facing exactly the Qibla? This was also a question. So he said, "No, Maulana, what do you think?" That technically the fatwa is that even if you're not facing exactly, but you're facing towards the front of the building, you know, you have a little bit of leeway. I said, "No, it should be exact, right?" So because I mean, this the masjid is for salah, let's be perfect about it, right? So then, but then we didn't know how it's going to look because you're entering into masjid from one angle and then you tilt the whole masjid when you enter, so that's going to look weird. So he said, "Oh, I want you to look into this." So I went and, you know, I reviewed it. I remember when I reviewed it the first time, he said, no, that's not reviewing. I mean, you have to go through this with a fine tooth comb. So then I learned how to 3D model, and then I created a 3D model of what it would look like inside the masjid. And then I had one of my other students actually build an entire 3D model and tried to see how we could reassign the space so we could maximize on everything. And then we would rotate it, look at it from different angles. So, I mean, a tremendous amount of work. And then finally, this was the last stages. So what happened first is we worked on the inside until it became maximized. There was nothing more that you could squeeze anything out of, you know? So when they sent me the final draft of the inside, it was gorgeous. The flow, it was fluid, it was natural. It was like, wow, this is perfect, you know? I felt satisfied. But now comes the whole discussion of how do we make the front. So I did, you know, a massive overhaul and, you know, said some pretty, very sort of crazy ideas, I guess, you know, about restructuring it and things to, different materials to use. But in this, that was going on until almost 6 o'clock right before I came here. So I guess that maybe that was a good topic to talk about because there was a lot of lessons that, you know, even in sometimes the very normal things that you learn. And one of the lessons that comes to mind is that it's so interesting that making the front face beautiful was not the first step. It was the very final step. Right? There was an entire year of work, an entire year of racking our brains, entire year looking over the blueprints before until the final thing. One day before the thing, then I'm sent the thing that, oh look, this is going to, or not one day, one weekend before that, look, this is going, we need to maximize the front, facade. But all the work really was on the shell. And then I said, look, this is the parameters. These are what we have to work with. This is the shell of the building. And we only have, you know, this much play, right? So it has to hug the shell of the building. That's a constant. We can't change that. Now everything works beyond that. And that really should be our approach to ourselves. You know, most people start the other way around. They're always working on the outside, right? How do I make, you know, put my best foot forward? How do I look to other people? How do people perceive me? Do you think, I mean, I'm not just talking about looks, just how do other people, what eyes do they look at me, right? Where do I stand in their eyes? And it's all about this facade, right? People want to be respected. People want to be looked at as intelligent. People want to be looked at as, I mean, depending on what age you are, right? People at a certain age, you ask a teenager or a person in their 20s, it's all about looks. At a certain point, it's about, okay, do you have a successful career? But it's all about how you look on the outside. But when the reality is, we got it the other way around. We should have spent all that time building on what's on the inside. And then the last detail, right, and perhaps the least important detail, is how it actually looks on the outside. So that's one lesson. The second lesson was that when you're creating, you know, a building or, you know, constructing anything, small mistakes can be devastating. Small mistakes can be, if you are 6 inches off in terms of the foundation, and there's not a person who's supervising the people who are constructing it, and after they construct it, if the joints don't meet, you're tearing down an entire wall. You're bringing down the roof, right? If there was one, you know, in this much of the people who had done that, look at what they had done over there. There was a structural design flaw where they didn't foresee, for example, when the water is going to flow, that there wasn't enough of an angle for the water to flow off. And so what happened is it collected and it actually went on the inside and then it started dripping here into the, you know, to the drop ceiling. Now, a person will say, well, how could I have thought about that, right? But in my mind, it's like, that's your job, right? If you're an architect, if you're a designer, this is what you do. You should have to think about these type of things. So if you want to fix that, that's not a small thing. Right, now you're going to have to take out the whole shelling, and then things are connected to other things, and then you have to rip that out, and then you have to reconstruct that. It's not a small thing. It's really devastating when, you know, inches off. I mean, for that, what was the thing? It was just a little bit of an angle. That's all you needed. A little bit of an angle, and you have solved the problem. But they made it perpendicular. So what you see is that even very small deviations can have very traumatic effects, right, on the final structure. And then I was just thinking about, here we are, you know, some of the most intelligent people in the country are sitting here grinding their heads over 13,000 square feet, trying to make sure that it's perfect, trying to think of all the use cases, and we still can hardly get it right. Right? I mean, I was speaking with Sheikh Hussein when we had worked on Pathoma. I mean, my God, the amount of time we put into, you know, that product, now it's being used in like every medical school in the world type of thing. But I mean, we went through that with a fine tooth comb. And in one of my recent discussions with him, he said, you know, Maulana, he said, you know, there's even in I've done this for so many years and I look back and he said, there's thousands of mistakes. Right now, no one might catch it. Right? I mean, the unknowing medical student won't catch it, and even maybe the full professor won't catch it. But the master knows. Right? The person who's really, I remember when we were writing questions, we just don't look it up in Robbins and say, this is, I mean, I was looking at the original papers that described the phenomena, you know, that was originally published at Harvard, how that progressed, you know, I mean, you're really going very fundamental about this. So when you take that approach, then you realize that it's very hard to arrive at perfection. And then you just think how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created this entire world. This is not 13,000 square feet. Right? And we talk about use cases. He created it with one person, right? With Adam and Hawa, two people. But he created it in such a way that it's able to accommodate, what, 6.2 billion people now? And there's still plenty of room to grow. That's pretty amazing. That's what you call. I mean, the amount of foresight, imagine the qudra of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala azza wa jal, the ilm of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala azza wa jal, and He created in such a circumstance that, you know, one thing is like you build something on something which is static. He built it on something that's spinning around at 7,000 miles per hour. And neither you feel it, nor I feel it. And we're none the wiser. And it's just not us. right? There's another sun, which is 93 million miles away. And these things are, you know, orbiting from each other. And there's several galaxies, and there's expanding universes. And in the entire cosmos, every single atom, every single molecule, which contains every single atom, which contains every single electron, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows exactly what that electron is doing. That's pretty amazing. And He designed it in such a way. I mean, when is it that you ever saw an electron get up one day and says, "Oh, I don't feel like Pauli's exclusion principle today"? It just doesn't do that. Every single electron in the entire universe is spinning perfectly. Perfectly. It was designed perfectly, and it works perfectly. And that's not 13,000 square feet. We're talking about 13 billions, trillions, I don't know how many light years. It's just, it's amazing. That فَتَبَارَكَ أَحْسَنُ الْخَالِقِينَ. These type of, when you engage in these type of endeavors, when you try to make something, then you really realize, wow, you know, what it really means to be al-Khaliq. Which actually goes, is a nice segue into another aspect of this, which is that when you make something, you become very attached to it. You become very, because you've invested something of yourself and you want to make it the best. And when you, it's a very personal connection. It's a very personal connection. You might have had that experience when you wrote a very powerful piece of poetry that you yourself liked very much. The same thing with this masjid project. We all are attached. We want to make sure that nothing can happen that would allow for its failure in the future. Well, think about that. The same thing applies in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's relationship to us. That Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is also our creator, and in a sense, you could say He's invested in us. Right? Not that He Himself is invested, He's invested in our success. And sometimes we don't think about that. People sometimes, you know, fall into the understanding that somehow Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants us to put us in Jahannam or something. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants to punish us. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants to make it hard. When it's actually, that's entirely not the case. The case is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants us to succeed. I remember very clearly when I was doing the Alim course and I had to go back in the middle to medical school. I wasn't done, right? I was like sort of in the middle. And I was just like, am I ever going to finish? So on and so forth. And I remember we were at a dinner party. And I was sitting there. Sheikh Hussein was at the same dinner table. And I was like, I was really concerned because I'm going back into the real world, you know, out of the madrasa where you're just sitting with, you know, the books of ilm. And I was like, I was just very concerned about being able to finish. So he said something to me that stuck with me, you know, it still sticks with me to this day. He said that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala didn't bring you this far to let you go. He didn't bring you this far, right? You're studying Tafsir Ibn Kathir and you finish studying Mishkat. He said, you didn't bring this far just to let you go. No one builds a building so that they can detonate it. They build a building so that other people can benefit from it. So look in our own lives. Look how far Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has brought us. He gave us chances to read Quran, to understand Quran, to learn the Arabic language. He gave us teachers in our lives. He gave us parents that care for us. I mean, all these different things that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala brought together, He was actually building us. He was building us because He wants us to be something. He wants to be us to be that center that not only is beautiful when you look at it, but that when people enter it, that they are able to benefit. He didn't create to detonate it. He didn't create it so that, you know, you can create it and then part of it is just left incomplete. So we have to have that attitude when when we think about ourselves, meaning having a positive attitude with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that He brought us this far, and inshallah He'll take us to completion. And I look at my own story, I mean, against all odds, you could say, right? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala completed it. And it can happen with everyone, because that's Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's mansha. That's His desire, that things are completed. The last thing, I guess, that we could perhaps glean from this is that we spent a lot of time in, the final thing was how it looks from the outside. So I put my iteration, I would send it to him, he would call me back, right, and he would say, okay, this is not going to work, or this is going to work. And then he would send me some other things, like he's showing me some of the very cutting-edge architecture at the University of Chicago. It's very, if you know the University of Chicago in Hyde Park in Chicago, it's really an architectural masterpiece. And it's really a blend of exactly what we're talking about, old world and new world. You look at much of it, has the old, you know, gargoyles and, you know, the very old world, west, east coast type of architecture. So that, but simultaneously it coexists with people using very different materials like sandstone and very cutting edge, modern, sleek lines. And, what is it? I'm forgetting the names, for the glazed glass that they use, and metal, and jiving it together, and how different materials work together. It's actually pretty interesting when you look at it. So we were going through these different pictures. So I put one picture together, I sent it to him, and he said, Maulana, you've gone completely traditional with this, right? Because on one hand, you were completely modern, like the sort of like minimalist, very, you know, sleek and glass and stone. And I went with like all with these, you know, curvilinear minaret type things and projections and intricate Moroccan work. He said, and he felt it was too busy, so okay, we took that one out. So then we made it much more urban, right, with sort of, you know, aluminum and those type of materials. And in the end, he saw things a certain way. Then I'm trying to you know, meet him with his goals. And I was like, you really are a minimalist when it comes to these types of things, when it comes to them. And I'm coming in with my things. And then at the end, you know, when he told me, he said that when I showed this to the majority of the people, they actually liked it. And because what happened is when I first got the thing, I was like, we put so much time in this, this has to be, this is not what we're going to put as our final product. Right? This is not happening. I called Hafiz Saeed. I'm like, I was just, and then he called immediately. Sheikh Hussein Malamar doesn't like it. So then, you know, everything sort of, and we spent hours and hours trying to refine this. But the fact that most of the people actually liked it. Right? And he said, I purposely didn't show them the old design, right? Because if they see that, then they would be biased, because the old design was really nice, but we couldn't do it because we had variances of the code. But at the end of the day, so we're putting together a thing, and it will be beautiful, inshallah. But, you know, I might not like it as much, maybe, as a different design. And one person will like it more. And the fact that everyone has a different thing that they find beautiful, right? And a different thing that they find aesthetically pleasing. But let me ask you something. When Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created the universe, who doesn't find water soothing? And who doesn't look at the moon and say, wow, that's beautiful? You take a young child sitting in the jungles of India, and you take a UFC student, and they look up at the same moon, and for a few moments, they just lose connection with the rest of the world and they're lost. They're like, wow, sitting in the moonlight. Same moon. That's what you call a masterpiece. Right? And the person who creates a masterpiece, what we call them is master. Whoever creates a masterpiece, that is our master. And when you keep that in the back of your mind, then when you go into sajda, it has a different meaning. Right? You're like, wow. This, if I had to do sajda to someone, this is who I'm going to do sajda to. Someone who creates like this, someone whose power is like this, someone whose ilm about every single nanoparticle is like this, that is the Rabb that deserves my ibadah. So anyway, I just wanted to share, I guess, a couple of, insights from an eventful weekend. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala allow us to create our own souls in such a way that they are beautiful from the inside, and that they're glowing in such a way that the nur reflects from outside, and it becomes an inviting light post for all around us. وَآخِرُ دَعْوَنَا أَنِ الْحَمْدُ لِلَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ